Adame, this child is gifted. And I heard that enough that I started to believe it.
If you have the opportunity, not a perfect opportunity, and you don't take it, you may never have another chance.
It all was so clear. It was just like the picture started to form itself.
There was no way in which a lie could prevail over the truth. Darkness over light, death over life.
Every day I wake up and decide, today I'm going to love my life. Decide.
My advice is, if they're going to break your leg once when you go in that place, stay out of there.
And then along come these differential experiences that you don't look for, you don't plan for, but boy, you better not miss them.
Yo, hip hop started out in the heart, yo. Not everybody trying to charge, say what?
This is What It Takes from the Academy of Achievement. I'm Alice Winkler. In the mid-1990s, this voice arrived like a revelation to a whole generation coming of age as the millennium was about to turn.
Come on, baby, light my fire. Everything you drop is so tired. Music is supposed to inspire. How come we ain't getting no higher?
The voice, Lauryn Hills, was powerful, deeply soulful, with a perfect dose of grit. Miss Hill fluidly switched between rapping and singing. She was stylish and beautiful, which never hurts. But more than that, she had beautiful things to say and funny things and profound political things. But of course, it's always hard to put a finger on exactly why a particular artist and a particular cultural moment collide in some kind of harmonic convergence to become a phenomenon. But Lauryn Hill was a phenomenon, and she was just 23.
I cross as a distant lands, made plans with the sheiks. Why you beef with freaks as my album sells peak, All I wanted was to sell like 500 and be a ghetto superstar since my first album blunted. I used to work at Foot Locker, they fired me in front it. Or I quit it, now I spit it. However do you want it? Now you get it, right in rhymes. In the range with the frames lightly tinted. And send it to your block and have my full name submitted. And if your lines sound like mine, I'm taking a percentage. Unprecedented and still respected when it's finished. I'm serious.
Then, just as quickly as she'd risen to international superstardom, Lauryn Hill backed out of the music business, out of public life, shut it down. She was like the J.D. Salinger of hip-hop. But at 25, soon after her retreat began, Miss Hill was inducted into the Academy of Achievement and made a rare appearance to speak to a group of students at their annual summit. She was also interviewed for their archive by journalist Gail Eichenthal. In the past couple of years, Lauryn Hill has begun to resurface, some, and she's gone through big transformations. But in this episode of What It Takes, you'll hear Lauryn Hill as she was undergoing an earlier transformation. It was June of 2000, just 2 years after the release of her first and only solo studio album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. So sit back and enjoy the music and the words of a truly original artist at the crossroads.
I'll be very honest with you, as a musician today, I'm not in the studio right now, and everybody in my world thinks I'm crazy. What's going on? You need another album out. You know, the time is running out. You have a window, a certain window to make music. And for a little while, I listened to that. And I was like in the studio working real hard, trying to get it done. And you know, music was created, definitely music that I think people will appreciate, but it wasn't my best. And it wasn't my best because there was no substance. And there was no substance because there was no experience. And the only reason why The Miseducation was the album it was because of a myriad of experiences that took place before the production part, before the creation.
I keep letting you back in. How can I explain myself?
Yeah.
I just can't be with no one else.
I mean, my whole life at a certain point was studio, hotel, stage, hotel, stage, hotel, studio, stage, and I was expressing, I was expressing everything from my past. You know, you have to go back to the well in order to give someone something to drink. You know, you can't, I felt like a cistern dried up and like there was nothing more, you know, and it was so beautiful because normalcy. I returned to a normal situation with my children running around, screaming, and it was wonderful. And I walked down the street and I went grocery shopping and I loved it. Every minute of it I love. I find, you know, even when it's raining, I just go outside, I look outside and I'm just so blessed to see it and to experience it because for such a long time I was just indoors. Life is peaks and valleys. And some people think that some people explain that as good times, bad times, but I actually think it's learning, or let's say learning mastership, okay? Or study mastership. Now, I went from the top of one mountain. I'd mastered something and people appreciated it. But, you know, once you're on the top of that mountain, you have to go this way. But in hip hop, everybody's like, I'm not moving. I'm the master. I'm great. I'm dope. I'm hot. I'm here. I've arrived. I'm not going anywhere. And that's what you stay stuck on top of one mountain, when God's intention is that we study and master a bunch of different things. And so here I am descending this hill and everybody's like, where are you going? You know, we're supposed to be on the top of the hill, but it's exciting time. It's definitely exciting time for me because I'm at the foot of another hill. So I would just encourage everybody, never be afraid of not knowing. Never be afraid of not knowing. Find out. Because that's how you get to mastership. Let's not be mediocre in our greatness. You know what I mean? Like, think big. Think big.
I want to take you through some of the experiences that set Lauryn Hill on the path that got her to where she was in 2000 when she spoke these words. Lauryn Hill grew up in South Orange, New Jersey, a diverse middle-class suburb near Newark that taught her an openness to different cultures, something you can certainly hear in her music. She was steeped, she said, in the Jewish community, the Asian community, the West Indian community, the Cuban community. Her father was a computer consultant and her mother a teacher. Failure in school was not an option, she said. So she did well academically, but got just as much of an education from her environment and from her family. As she spoke to students at the Academy of Achievement event, one of them asked her what her mother did that gave her so much self-confidence.
Oh, let me not even say that. My mother is still, she's right there, and I was going to say the belt. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. I'm joking. every time I say that, my mother thinks that I make her look so bad. But a friend of mine put it this way. My mother used to make me sandwiches, and not physical sandwiches. But spiritual sandwiches, okay? She would give me bread, and the bread was encouragement and love. And then the meat was the correction, okay? And then there was another piece of bread, which was the encouragement and the love. So that worked, you see? She just dealt with me in truth at all times. You know, wait, let me go back. Wait a minute. That's not true, because there was this one time. Do you guys remember those plastic shoes, jellies? Listen, I wanted them so bad, my mother told me I couldn't have them because they would melt on my feet. And I was like, you know, and you grow up now and you realize, what you said? And that's why I have on plastic shoes right now, because I wanted those jellies. And then there was, you remember those raincoats, the clear ones? She told me that I would suffocate if I wore one of those. Fine, no, I'm serious. But she dealt with me in love. There was a certain amount of, there was a huge level of freedom in our relationship. because we exercised choice from an early age. But at the same time, there was discipline. You know what I mean? There were parameters. But we could choose. You know, I remember her telling me stories about when I was 5 years old. Every Saturday, of course, it was in the school day. But Saturdays and Sundays, she would allow me to dress myself. And, of course, I would put on, you know, my cowboy boots, like some crazy skirt, a flash dance sweater. You know, ridiculous, just looking real crazy. But at that point, from 5 years old, she was allowing me to be an individual, allowing me to be unique. We just had a very nonconformist family, a very loving. Love is so important. A loving environment. You know, I can't tell you how blessed I am to know how much love. And let me tell you, because when you get out there and you realize, see, I grew up in a big family. My grandmother had 13 kids and it was always a lot of us. And we just, you know, we just thought everybody's family is like this until I met other people who were scarred. My fiance is so funny. When two people meet in a relationship, you know, everybody has baggage. You know, we all bring baggage to every situation and every relationship. But the good part is that when you find someone that you think you have something in common with, you recognize the bags. You know, you're like, oh, that's Samsonite. I got that. That's a toiletry bag. You put a toothbrush in there. But when I met my fiance, I had my little travel kit and he had like U-Hauls. And I was like, whoa, I was like, what goes in there?
This happens a lot with Lauryn Hill. She starts telling one story and it leads her to ideas that veer wonderfully into another story. But to get back to the chronology for a moment, we were talking about her childhood and the early influences in her life. She remembers from a very young age being intent on achieving, period, at whatever it was she put her mind to, acting, dancing, singing. At 13, she appeared on the amateur hour at the Apollo. She sang Who's Loving You Now and was actually booed. It was devastating but didn't deter her. She just loved singing too much. During this interview, journalist Eichenthal wondered what music Lauryn Hill fell asleep to each night when she was a child. And remember, it was well before the era of digital music.
Oh boy, I think What's Going On, Marvin Gaye. I just remember like playing the first side over and over again. You know, there was one of those old record players. After I moved up from the little suitcase record player, there was a bigger record player that my grandmother had given to me, and it was one of those old arms that, you know, when you pressed repeat, it turned and went down. And I used to play my records aloud until one night my mother was like, this is too loud, I'm not having it. And so I put on headphones, but in order for me to listen to the records, you know, the headphones didn't stretch all the way to my bed from the record player. So I had to sleep on the floor in order to hear the records, and that's where I slept until college. I slept on the floor right next to the record player until I was probably 19 years old, really. I mean, I just started sleeping in the bed again because my records, you know, that was their space, the bed. And I just stayed on the floor listening to this music. Actually, to be very honest with you, I don't listen to a lot of music at all anymore at all. I think that's very bizarre, too, because it was such a comfort zone for me. But I don't know if I had my fill, you know, but I don't listen to a lot of music anymore because I'm creating it now. You know, everything takes place in a season. There was a season where that's all I did was listen. And now I'm just in a place where I don't listen, I create. And if I do listen, you know, there are specific things that I listen to and for specific reasons. I'm no longer listening for I rarely listen for the sheer pleasure. I'm listening for the tool, I'm listening for the instrument, I'm listening for the art, I'm listening for, boy, that was crazy what they just did.
She was intent on creating something original and something that steered away from where hip-hop by the 1990s had gone, namely commercial, swaggering, and increasingly violent. Now, how come your talk turned cold? Gain the whole world for the price of your soul. Trying to grab hold of what you can't control. Now you all floss for the sight to behold. Wisdom is better than silver and gold.
I think we all have a certain corner to hold. We, earlier this year, Curtis Mayfield passed away. And there was a memorial. They asked me to sing at the memorial. And I was realizing that what Curtis represented in the 60s and 70s, you know, it's like there's a season, and it's not really about the messenger per se. It's more about the message and how he had a time where he had to hold it because there, you know, other people were singing love songs and other things. You know, he had a very political, spiritual message, and even though it was entertaining and you enjoyed it and you could dance to it, you know, there was this very heavy value. And as I listened to his eulogy and as I listened to the music, I mean, music that I grew up listening to, it just dawned on me that our generation is no different. You know, someone has to hold it. When everyone else is being indulgent and doing whatever they want to do, someone has to be responsible so that that music reaches and touches, you know, a specific chord. And that may not be me. You know, I may lose my mind tomorrow, but it's got to be somebody. Now don't you understand,
man, universal law? It was her, at least for a time. I'll pick back up with the story of Lauryn Hill's rapid rise to fame, which is important to review to understand what came next. By the end of high school, Ms. Hill had joined a band that would eventually become the Fugees, the word Fuji a slur for refugees. The Fugees launched Lauryn Hill's career as a singer and rapper. Their second album, The Score, was equal parts reggae, rap, and soul, with infectious laid-back beats and often political lyrics about injustice. Many critics consider it one of the best hip-hop albums ever made.
Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and make you want me.
Now that I escape, sleep, walk away.
The Score won the Grammy for Best Rap Album of the Year and sold millions of copies worldwide. During the 2012 presidential race, Barack Obama listed Ready or Not, the song you're hearing, as his number one favorite song. One of the other huge hits on the album was a cover version of the song Roberta Flack made famous in the 70s, Killing Me Softly. It rose to number one on the pop Billboard chart. And basically, I just said that so I'd have an excuse to play it. And can you blame me?
I heard he sang a good song. I heard he had a style. And so I came to see him and listen for a while. And there he was, this young boy, stranger to my eyes, strumming my pain with his fingers.
Just as the Fugees were taking a victory lap, the band broke up, partly the result of a romantic relationship gone wrong between Hill and her bandmate, Wyclef Jean. But Lauryn Hill talked about the other factors that led her to begin working furiously on a solo album.
There's a time for everything. There's a time to be in a group, and there's a time to be solo. At least there was for me. If I had had it my way, I would have been in the group forever. I enjoyed the group atmosphere. I thought, you know, it's so good to have two guys on stage backing you up. But the interesting thing about entertainment is that when you're struggling, everybody goes in with the same goals. You know, but somewhere along the success area, you start to look at everyone around you and go, wait a minute, where are you going? Where are you headed? Because I'm going this way. What happened? I thought we were all on the... Sometimes success can do that. Sometimes it really illuminates creative differences, spiritual differences, emotional differences. And I, you know, just like a young person would think that, you know, the friends that you, my fifth grade friends are going to be my friends forever, you know, throughout high school, throughout. And it's not that they cease being your friends, but sometimes you just mature to a place and some people get there faster, some people don't. And hopefully ultimately everyone catches up. But it's really interesting because I didn't actually make a decision to be solo. It really just happened. I promise you that it's hard to explain, but you know, I'd intended to be in the group forever until I found myself in circumstances where I felt the inner desire to express myself freely and openly without any constraint, without anybody saying, "Hey, that's, you can't say that. That's not fly. You can't say that. People won't," you know what I mean? So the only way I could have done that was in doing a solo release.
Yo, we about to check.
Lauryn Hill's 1998 solo debut, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, was met with euphoria by both fans and critics. At the Grammys that year, Lauryn Hill won Best New Artist, and Miseducation won Album of the Year as well as three other Grammys. And its power hasn't waned. In 2015, it was selected for the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry. The title, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, was in large part an homage to Carter Woodson, a black historian who was one of the first scholars to study African-American history. One of his groundbreaking books on Lauryn Hill's parents' bookshelves was The Miseducation of the Negro.
Who made these rules?
You know, Miseducation, wow, it, every day it means something more to me, actually. People automatically thought, you know, oh my, she must not have done school, you know, maybe their teachers didn't teach anything, but that wasn't it. The meaning behind it was really sort of a catch in me learning that, you know, when I thought I was my most wise, really not wise at all, and then my humility, and in those places that most people wouldn't expect a lesson to come from. That's where I learned so much.
I'll be at this, flipping in together on the dirty mattress. You can't match this, rapper slash actress. More powerful than two Cleopatra. Bomb graffiti on the tomb of Nefertiti. MCs ain't ready to take it to the Serengeti. My rhymes is heavy, like the mother sister Betty. El Boogie spars with stars and constellations. Then came down for a little conversation. Adjacent to the king, fear no human being. Roll with cherubims to Nassau Coliseum. Now here this mixture with hip hop meets scripture, develop a negative into a positive picture.
I mean, it was personal. I think that's probably the only reason why I put my name in the title. You know, because it was I'll just say that I'd gone through a lot. A huge emotional and spiritual battle prior to the creation of that album. And the funny thing is that while I was going in the battle, I couldn't see my hand despite my face. I mean, I really couldn't see anything because I was so emotionally entangled in everything that I'd gone through. But it was like once I was delivered from that situation and once I got the perspective, was able to look back at heartache and look back at pain and disappointment.
Let's love ourselves and we can't fail.
For some reason, it all was so clear. The picture started to form itself. The songs started to create themselves. I was able to look back and be a narrator of my own situation.
And what was the cause of all that heartache and disappointment that led to the creation of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill?
You know, it was about a young woman in the music industry. And the pitfalls, the snares, the traps, and they don't stop. They keep coming. I think that because I grew up in such a loving family structure, I thought that everybody did. And therefore, I thought that everybody reaped the benefit of that love. And pretty naive way to think. And so I learned very important lessons about people and their voids. And how when you have voids, you know, like a black hole just sucks, you know, and consumes everything into it. And I met a lot of those people, met a lot of black holes, a lot of people with a lot of deep, deep, painful voids who found it easy to take advantage and to manipulate and to deceive someone with me who just, you know, all I want to do is love.
Beware the false motives of others. Be careful of those who pretend to be brothers, and you never suppose it's those who are closest to you, to you. They say all the right things to gain their position. They use your kindness as their ammunition to shoot you down in the name of ambition. They do.
A lot of that was unconscious creation, unconscious creativity, because I was so overwhelmingly emotional. You know, it was just like I couldn't, I just had to write about this. Because every time that God navigates my ship, there's nothing cerebral going on. There's very little, you know, there's very little thought. It's almost as if I have the directions. It's all there and it's clear. These are your orders. Just go forth and carry them out.
Lauryn Hill talked a lot about taking directions from a higher source in this interview and about how she read the Bible every day for sustenance. If the entire week is a battlefield, she said, the Bible is a parachute with a box of reserves like the ones that come in the middle of a war with food, water, and a toothbrush.
So I was going to say, what I've consciously decided to do is be patient and wait for those instructions again, as opposed to the instructions from the record company.
Lauryn Hill was patient, waiting for her instructions. Her fans, not so much. With the exception of an MTV Unplugged live event released as an album in 2002, Lauryn Hill has not recorded another album of her own music. And I give that qualifier because in summer of 2015, she did have 6 songs on a tribute album to Nina Simone called Nina Revisited. I'll play you a bit of that before the podcast is over. But in the intervening years since Miseducation, her fans, millions of them, have been despondent and often disappointed, even angry, on the few occasions Ms. Hill has surfaced. She's been famously late, for instance, to her own concerts, sometimes hours late. Back in 2000, when she appeared before students at the Academy of Achievement Summit, this is how Lauryn Hill described what she was struggling with as a mega celebrity, uncomfortable with her new stature.
The music industry is just a microcosm of the world. So whenever you stand for something and you stand for goodness and truth, you will always get resistance. That's period. Whether you're in the pharmaceutical industry, the record industry, or whatever, whenever you stand for truth and for the service, you know, the service of others. See, I could make money very easily. I could make records that are self-indulgent and, you know, basically self-promote me. I could do that. I could do that. Promote myself. That was redundant, but you know what I mean. You know, just do those things. It's very easy. As a matter of fact, you know, lyrically as an MC, that stuff comes easy. But in order to promote something higher, I mean, I feel now at the ripe old age of 25 that the only thing that I could do is serve others. And because there are people who have not reached that point in their walk, you know, yes, there's a little anger, there's a little resentment because you raise a standard, you know, you especially when you do it and you make some noise, you know, and you do it and people actually listen to what you have to say and like your record is bumping on the radio and you're saying something that holds a mirror up to a lot of the negativity and self-indulgent things and messages that a lot of other people, you know, but we're all young. I mean, I have a hard time being so hard on the music world, especially hip hop, because most of them come out of the hood 17 years old, having no clue or concept of what life really is. I'm telling you, I'm so blessed to have reached this place where, you know, 5 years ago, I was so thin-skinned. Whatever anybody said would just, oh, my God, they don't like this rhyme and, oh, my songs and, you know. And then one day I woke up, and it was like my skin was just, it was so thick, it was impenetrable by those fiery darts. They just had no effect. And I realized that was a strength and a confidence that only came from a higher source.
Second verse is dedicated to the man more concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women. Him and his man come in the club like hooligans. Don't care who they offend, popping yang.
Like you got yang.
Let's not pretend. The one that pack pissed out by the waistman, crissed out by the casement. Still the name of this basement. The pretty face man claiming that they did a bid, man. Need to take care of their 3 or 4 kids. Been the face in court case when the child support's late. Money taking, heartbreaking. Now you wonder why women hate me. The sneaky silent man, the punk domestic violence man, the quick to shoot the steamer. Stop acting like boys and be men. How you gonna win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? Come again.
For me now, I'm learning that it's more important to be righteous than to be right. I've tried to be right. You know, this is right. This is an injustice. This is a travesty. I'm right. But I've been very unrighteous. And still right. Oh my God, you know, because you can attack someone completely right, but it doesn't resolve anything. So I understand now that the battlefield and that the war is so much greater than what we see before us. You know, I live in this physical body. This is like my address, like 22 Eater Terrace. I just gave everybody my address, but that's my address. Write me. No. But this is where I live, you know. But there's something much deeper. Who I am, you know, has nothing to do with, you know, the hair and the shoes and stuff, even though I like shoes. But, you know, it has nothing to do with that. So I pray for the people who don't understand me. And I tell you, be honest with you, I pray more now to understand than to be understood. I pray now to know, to learn how to love than to be loved. Because God has given me an abundance. You understand what I'm saying? Our enemies are not, you know, they're not flesh and blood. And our problems are not flesh and blood, even though we think they are. I don't mean to sound ethereal, because what I'm saying, I'm telling you, is heavy as bricks. It's very, very concrete. Sometimes it can sound like doo doo doo, you know, but it's not that. You know, it's like, who saw the movie The Matrix? Okay, good. Then we can start from a point of reference. Matrix was a banging movie to me, and the reason why I appreciated it so much was because, do you remember at the end when Neo like realized his potential? He started to see the binary code. You remember that, the whole world? Well, that's where I'm trying to be spiritually. I'm trying to see the word of God in the whole world. So every time that agent throws a punch, I'm like, I see you. Oh, okay. You know, I'm just catching his punches. But here's the trick. Here's the trick. You know, here's the trick is that you have to remember that sometimes you can be an agent. You can be an agent to yourself. You can be an agent against someone else and not even realize that you're being used. That's the matrix. In order to be used by God, you have to really be used. You know, we always want to be used for the glorious jobs. Let God put me on the stage in front of the people in the Grammy show with a nice dress on. Let me just praise your name. But that's not being used. Sometimes in order to be used, you also have to be humiliated. You have to be humiliated sometimes. You have to be kicked and beaten. Let me tell you another thing about the Matrix. Going back to the Matrix is that I was always confused about it. I always thought that, you know, the Matrix was battling the enemy out there, picking them out. I'm going to find those enemies. I'm going to get that enemy. Until I realized that until you conquer the enemy in yourself, you can't deal with anyone.
And so whatever Lauryn Hill was battling, inside and out, she stepped away from the music business that had given her both fame and fortune and got back to living, back to raising what would eventually be her 6 children, waiting, as she said earlier, for new experiences, new wisdom, and new direction from above. Just last year, as I said earlier, Lauryn Hill recorded 6 songs made famous by Nina Simone, another utterly original artist. It may not be the comeback Lauryn Hill fans were waiting for, but it's Lauryn Hill on her own terms, and that her fans can applaud.
Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Woo. And I'm feeling good.
Lauryn Hill, speaking to the Academy of Achievement. Go ahead and tweet it out. If you're a fan, you know your friends want to hear this. I'm Alice Winkler, and this is What It Takes.
You know how I feel. Blossom on a tree. You know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day.
Funding for What It Takes comes from the Catherine B. Reynolds Foundation.
Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies are having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean.